Recording has started here on the Owner's Box. Welcome to another edition. I'm Billy Koch, founder and managing partner of Little Red Feather Racing Club. Joining me alongside his own, always, Michelle Yu, who has her hair up today so that she will not play with it.
Maybe.
The entirety of the show.
Maybe. It was up yesterday, too, that I didn't play with it.
Right. We had fun yesterday. We were on another podcast.
John Green, that's called Rail Talk?
Rail Talk, yeah.
Rail with, Talk.
Yeah. And it was a lot of fun. I mean, it was cool. It was cool not being on our own podcast. So you could, and answering other people's questions. And then, of course, we just basically.
I know. I felt bad. We just like steamrolled John. He was like,
at one point. Yeah, John Green like barely spoke the entire time. You and I just went back and forth. But you can check that out. I don't know how, but it's called Rail Talk and it's John Green. Figure it out. That's the plug.
It was funny. It was fun. It was fun to do, though.
Super fun. We have a great show today. One of our favorite guests, Carrie Brogdon, is going to join us in a couple minutes, and she's going to talk all about OBS April, which is coming up. She's sitting in front of her computer right now. She watches all the breeds. So we're going to talk about what she looks for in a breeze, what are the positives about selling and buying at two-year-old sales, especially
I'm
OBS.
I'm also going to ask her really random questions just for people that maybe haven't been to a sale. When do the horses come? Like, how do I find the horse I'm looking for? You know, like the physical layout, because
you can do that. Yeah.
You know, stuff like that. So
I think be less sophisticated. I'll be more sophisticated.
Okay.
I will do basically how we are in life anyway.
I'm going to put up a Twitter poll. Okay. Who's more sophisticated?
Who's more sophisticated?
Billy or Michelle? Or although the gray hair is distinguished.
Wait, put three, neither.
Okay.
All right.
That's
the poll. That's the poll. All right, Michelle, we had some, the final Derby preps were last weekend. I'm sure everybody knows about them. So let's not spend too much time on them because this is going up on Friday. It's been a week already.
All right. Well, who was your most impressive winner for the weekend?
I think easily Sierra Leone. You know, track biases were speed all day and this horse just lagged in the back and then unleashed this. I saw the Twitter thing. I know. Here's the thing.
Okay.
This horse has gears like he's nice and relaxed, except for him going into the gate, which could be an issue on Derby day. And he's just big and long. And I told you, I saw him in the paddock only because I wanted to get out.
He looks like he's going fast, right?
He really doesn't. And he has like tons of gears. He just does everything so easily. He's going to be tough to beat in the Derby just because it looks like a mile and a quarter is not going to be any problem for this horse. He just needs the right trip. And he's different from Tappet Trice last year, who won the Bluegrass. The Bluegrass has been known as this prep that can't win the Derby if you win the Bluegrass. This horse, to me, seems a little bit more athletic than Tappet Trice. Tappet Trice seemed like a big lug. Kind of plotter. Yeah, just rah, 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 rah. Whereas this horse, even though he's kind of this, whatever he does, he goes forward. he's a pretty cool horse. So I think, obviously, he's the second choice. He's going to be the second choice behind Fierceness. I thought he was pretty impressive. I thought horse was impressive, too. The Brad Cox horse that ran second, he was only like his third lifetime start.
Is that the one that was on the lead? Is that Top Connor?
No, not Top Connor. It was
Just a Touch.
Yes, Just a Touch. Yeah. Yes. I thought he might get a piece somewhere. I read an article, I think it was in DRF, that he has the same kind of thing as Mage. Right? He was impressive winning. Then he ran second. Mm-hmm. He's kind of got that Mage feeling who won last year. Now stands at Airdrie Stud for your good friend, Brett Jones.
We love Brett Jones. We had Stronghold win the Santa Anita Derby, which was, I felt like, a fantastic outcome all the way around. And we'll have to get the Wallers.
I've
on
already
our
asked.
Show.
I've asked them.
Well, what'd they say?
Oh, they're going to come on. We're gonna get the Lars. It's such a great story. First of all, it's great for Phil D'Amato, who obviously you and I know very well. He's our main trainer, and I'm extremely proud.
Teary-eyed. I don't think Phil's ever gotten teary eyed for your horses, Billy. No, I'm just kidding.
Yeah, probably not. He doesn't care about me much, but it was great to see him win and his team win and that horse win and Free Sue. And just so you know, and we
that was his first grade one.
I think we've mentioned this on the show that the mare Spectator. Mm-hmm. passed away giving birth to Stronghold. So, mm-hmm. I mean, there's just a great story there. And, you know, I keep repeating things that might've been said on the pod yesterday, but I think our hearts, me and you personally, we will be rooting for Stronghold in the Derby, no question. Kind of reminds me of Hot Rod Charlie a little bit. That like,
yeah,
I think he's going to get. I think he's going to get a groundswell of the popular vote. How's right. that? Like I think he has a great story. Good people, Frisou, D'Amato. I think it's new faces, and I think he's going to get some attention that way.
Also, I love that the next couple of days, the social media push behind him from the barn, from Julie and from Jess, right. they're shooting him in the stall. And like, he's all, you know, little bright eyed and bushy tailed. He's like happy with himself. They brought him out to see them, like turn the page on the D'Amato sign that has like yeah. how many stakes winners he has. And yeah. he's just standing there looking like he's so a really cool
horse. I've been around him, you know, a lot because I'm there a lot. We got a bunch of horses. He's a really cool horse. Nothing really bothers him. He's real classy. He's not the biggest horse in the world, but he's really athletic.
He reminds me of Clifford mentally.
Yeah. But you know what, Michelle, he's probably not going to get a lot of attention betting wise. I think he's going to be in that 15 to 20 to one range would be my guess, but he's not without a prayer. I mean, I haven't looked at the numbers yet. I don't think any of the numbers have come out, you know, Thoroughgraph, Ragazin, Byers, all that. I mean, all Byers are out, but it's going to be interesting to see where he stacks up because he's not hopeless. Let's just right. say that.
I agree. So, I agree.
Yeah. One more prep, so New York.
Super exciting. I actually didn't watch the New York prep. It went to Resilience, who was a horse that I had liked, you know, earlier on, but he had just kind of fallen off my radar and I didn't watch the race. So if you did, you can recap it.
You know, there wasn't, he was good. There's not much you can say. It had a really good trip. Johnny B did his thing. And, you know, it was I'm looking at the form right now. So they called it a modest edition of the Wood Memorial, right? He didn't beat much in there. He's probably going to be a long shot, 20 to 1 or so in the Derby. But hey, give him a credit, ran a huge race, and congratulations to the connections.
Okay. Very good. That's kind of like our biggest recap right there. So I wanted to bring this up since you were talking about New York anyways. That the New York Racing Association announced that it is providing 25 local nonprofit organizations with a reserved picnic table for each day of the Belmont Racing Festival, which is going to be at Saratoga that first weekend sure. in June. So I think it's very neat, right? Because I think that we have seen the push that people want to be able to be there and everyone wants this and that. And a lot of times when you go to these events, you end up getting priced out or there's no way to, you know, get them, you know, someone else has reached in and gotten them. So if it's like this charity thing, there's going to be opportunities for these charities to be able to, you know, sell them and make money for their causes or, you know, bring their donors in, whatever. I think it's worth like over $25,000, just like if you had sold them alone. So I thought that was a really nice thing to do to bring in some of the community as they're going to be, you know, moving Belmont to Saratoga for this year.
I can't add anything else to your comments. I think, we need more items like that. For sure. We need more items on the Stuart Rapoli.
We have to get John Stewart on the show, right? Like, I mean, it's an absolute must.
Like, what is happening? Like, what it is so strange. I find this whole thing. No one else thinks it's strange.
I think it's strange.
Very powerful men, like saying weird things on there, and like bashing each other, and like I find it I find it so odd that honestly I've stopped reading it.
Remind you of like when Trump goes on his rant?
Yeah. But Trump is Trump, and I think Trump is doing it intentionally. Okay. And I'm not 100% sure that these two, like, I still, even if Mike Rapoli says to me straight in the eye that I control my Twitter account, I do not believe that.
Really?
Yes, I don't believe there's any possible way that now it could be that there's someone sitting next to him and he's saying, just write this and this and this. I cannot believe that he is getting on a computer or on a phone and texting people, calling people names and that kind of thing. Like, it just seems so strange to me. It's like, why are we doing this? I don't know. It seems very odd to me. And the fact that John Stewart, is that his name?
Yeah.
I mean, he he's just buying everything. Like, he doesn't give a fuck. Like, he's just, he reminds me of like a new NBA owner that's just coming in and flexing in his muscles and wagging some of his other parts and being like, oh yeah, of course, I just bought this horse. I just bought this horse. I bought Goodnight Olive. I bought this, I'm buying this. I'm going after the Winx baby. Like, it's so odd. It's like, usually you don't talk about that stuff. You just do it.
Right.
So I don't get it. I don't know. Maybe I'm in the minority.
Well, we have to get John on for sure.
Sure. And we'll ask him. I mean, we had Rapoli on, and we'll ask John about like what's going on. Like, why even get into this beef with Rapoli? Like, what is it?
Carrie just popped in and she's got a special guest.
Oh my goodness. Let's bring her on. Carrie Brogdon joining the owner's box. Here we go.
This is Vijack.
Oh, Vijack.
Oh, that's cool.
About Phil D'Amato and Stronghold. That was a Phil D'Amato trainee. Had the track record, I believe, at Santa Anita for the turf. 6 furlongs on the turf, maybe.
What are you doing with him?
Yeah, he was a great estate fan on the dirt too. He's retired here. He is a yearling babysitter, so he has 8 colts that he babysits, and they're all in the barn right now with the farrier. So, but yeah, he's waiting for his boys.
It's quite obvious that you completely forgot that you were doing this thing this morning. You were standing on a farm.
I told Craig, I said, oh my God, I have too much gray hair right now. I need a hat to cover it up.
That's okay. I wear a hat on every show. A hat and a hoodie is my show thing. But we do want to talk really quick about the OBS sales. OBS April's coming up, Carrie.
Quick, I want to add to that. That was my third thing of note over here, is that the session for today, April 11th, has been moved to April 12th because of severe weather in Ocala. So they
normally I watch every single breeze online, but because of that, that's actually why I'm at the farm at the farrier today. Normally I would be watching it. Yeah.
So Carrie, tell us a little bit about, because you buy and sell, you breed, you do everything, you race, but tell us, like, let's start with the selling of horses. Like, what are the pros? What are the advantages of selling at a place like OBS April?
Well, I think, you know, you have the world, the market, the world, everyone is there. I mean, there's been so many, I mean, the 2-year-old sales have gotten some negative publicity lately, but if you look at the true results, I mean, there have been so many amazing horses that have come out of it. So if you take them there, you know, either OBS March, OBS April, or the Maryland Fasig Tipton sale, I mean, that's where everyone goes. You have a ready-made racehorse. Honestly, for the majority of it, you will not be surprised. Most of the consigners know their difference between their top horses and the horses that all need to be turned into cash. You know, the lower level stuff. It's usually pretty obvious by the time you get to this point.
How is that? Like, how, tell us a little bit about like a horse's journey, because you're involved with a lot of consigners. We've been partnered up with, whether it's Julie Davies or the Numerics, or like, what is the process from the time they are yearlings to the time right now that they're about to sell at OBS April? Give us like a timeline of what happens in those moments.
Sure. Well, they'll go right down from the September sale usually, or if they've failed to sell, or if we've kept them, we'll send them down there in September, and then they'll get their breaking started. A lot of the consigners do scrape shins, so to prevent buck shins, and I am a full believer in that scraping shins helps avoid the horrendous injury of bucking shins. But anyway, so they'll get broken, then they'll go through that process, and then come December, I mean, really, obviously, they haven't asked them for any speed drills yet, but they understand how they move, how they gallop, their mindset, too. Obviously, with a racehorse, I mean, if you have all the talent in the world and it's a lunatic, or if it's stubborn or whatever, it doesn't matter. So, you know, they start to formulate what sales you're going to go to. Oh, we're pointing to OBS March. This horse looks very precocious, or let's give it more time, or, ooh, this horse really moves awesome on the dirt. Let's go to Maryland. You know, so it's all a process. And then you really, until the last 6 weeks before the sale, it's, you know, sometimes you think you're going to have the second coming of Secretariat, and then you ask it for speed and you're like, so, you know, and sometimes reverse. Sometimes you have a horse where you couldn't freaking giveaway as a damn yearling. You'll see that. I mean, you see $20,000 yearlings come up here, work lights out, become grade one winners because you know, it's a performance sale. That's why I love the two-year-old sales.
I have a question. We saw a horse break the track record yesterday, Tis the Law, Billy. Hold on, buddy. And do you as a consigner want to be the bullet? Like, I mean, I know a lot of times it brings attention. But is there too much? Is it too much pressure to have like your horse work 20 and change or 9 and 4? Like,
no, I don't think so. Carrie?
Well, I think it's more, I would much rather have a beautiful, long striding, perfect gallop out 10 and 1 than I would a racing chop chop, no stride, knees hitting their chins 9 and 4. So to me, obviously, speed is completely valued. And most of our graded stakes winners that we have sold as 2-year-olds have worked 10-2 and under. Mind Your Biscuits was one of the few horses that worked 10 and 3, but he worked when it was really hot, in the last set. But we've had a lot of them worked 10-2 going to be graded stakes. Yeah. But the 11 flats. Yeah. Yep.
Yeah, but it is interesting.
But of course, it's different, you know.
Yeah, as a buyer, let's shift hats now. As a buyer, I'm going to put this hat on and put my buyer hat on. And now I'm thinking to myself, I just see Carrie's thumb, but now I'm thinking to myself, okay, what are the advantages of buying a 2-year-old, let's say OBS April, than buying a horse from Carrie as a yearling? Can you talk a little bit about that?
Oh, well, obviously you found if they're sound, how they move, if they have a good brain. I mean, a lot of the times though, these really, really, really well-bred fillies, you will not be able to buy those kind, for example, at the 2-year-old sale. So, you know, but as far as performance based, you'll know, and then you have to look at your consigner. Is it a trusted consigner? I mean, obviously there's a lot of publicity lately about, you know, another 2-year-old consigner that it came out that the horses had, I guess, been given clenbuterol, which is complete, you know, so it's one of those things where you get to know, I mean, you know, you're going to be very comfortable buying from Eddie Woods or Nile or the Demerics and I think that so you have a big one up and you know the horse is sound. I mean, there's plenty of horses where, you know, for whatever reason, they're exposed, I guess is the right way to put it. Maybe they have a stifle OCD and it bothers them or something like that.
Yeah, that's totally valid. And I see your points. And you talked about, you know, trusted people, and we on our show constantly, because we bring in owners all the time, and we do our thing at the end where we say, what's the one thing you've learned, and would give it and say, find people you trust. Mm-hmm. I guess, Carrie, how do you do that?
Well, that is a really good question. I guess you have to employ an agent. If you don't live the industry, employ an agent that does. So sure. A lot of the top agents will understand. I mean, honestly, Alistair Roden has killed it buying very reasonable horses from us. I mean, he bought an American Freedom off of us that worked 10 and 2 from Julie Davies. And I mean, he was like giddy. And the horse became a good stakes winner. And actually, the people turned down obscene money for him. But it's one of those things where, like, Alistair is well known for kind of being very honest and straightforward and not closed-minded. You know, you don't have to always buy the most obvious horses. So I think, having a trusted advisor is a good thing.
I think that's a great point. And I think that's something you could get from going to OBS or going to someone like yourself and saying like, hey, I'm a new client. I have $500,000 to spend on the 2-year-old sale. Carrie or Todd Wojo or someone like, or Billy or Michelle, who would you go talk to? And then interview these people, like go meet with 3 or 4 people and figure out who you like, who you trust, what's their resume like. Am I crazy to think that people just like show up at the sale and say, oh, that guy's cool, I'll go with him?
Well, obviously there's been plenty of times where I've seen a person come in with plenty of money and they get with an agent that I'm like, it's not going to go well. And I think that people have to understand in the thoroughbred industry, and I guess like any really major business, there's 3 different kinds of people. there's people that are in the know, and there's people that think they know, but they don't know. And then there's the crooks. So you try to stay, if you can find number one, and number two gets lucky sometimes, but number three is the one to avoid the most if possible. And I guarantee if you went around the sales grounds and asked consigners quietly and say, you know, that you would have the same list of five people on their hands that would be that style, that type of person.
So. Interesting. Thank you. Michelle, go ahead.
So yesterday, Billy and I were on another podcast and we were talking about when we're at the sales and, you know, we have to look at the vet and everything. And like Billy says, I don't even put my real name. I put something completely random. As a consigner, do you look at the cards for when people come and like write, do they like, you're like making sure they're real names? And do you look at the vets to see like, did Billy look at my horse?
Well, I would say like with the card people, most of the card people, like Kelly Lively runs the cards for us and also runs it for the Demerics. She knows if Chad Brown comes over there and he writes like, Larry Bird, they're going to be changing that.
Right.
So, but absolutely. I think a lot of people, though, they don't want to buy a bad horse. So I think a lot of people will actually proactively discuss the potential horse. And I tell you, I just had it happen at the March sale. I had two fillies work awesome. Both of them worked great. The one filly caught a tailwind on her breeze and worked a lot better than she was expected to. And she's, both fillies are at the Demerics consignment, and I know the one filly is a superstar and the other filly they're thinking has very modest talent. Well, they had the same number of shows, but the one filly has eight vets and the other filly has one vet. And I guarantee that a lot of that is based on the fact that when people went up there and said, what do you think between this one and this one, the consigner is going to say, this is the runner, this one, not sure. So I think that that plays a lot into the two-year-old sale. The yearling market is so different because all you're watching them do is walk a straight line back and forth. You know, it's much more pedigree and sire driven.
Yeah, you brought up pedigree a couple of times. I think it's important, and I've heard people say this, and just maybe touch on this for a minute, is that when you go to these two-year-old sales, you're looking for athletes. You're looking for, you know, that beautiful stride, like you mentioned, and sometimes you have to sacrifice pedigree because a lot of those horses were purchased by end users at the yearling sale. Am I saying anything crazy there?
No, I agree 100%. I mean, that's actually why we're learning to take the really well-bred fillies. I mean, you know, they had a big write-up in Mobius March about the four beautifully bred fillies with updates in the sale, and two of the four were Machmerhall homebreds. And it's because I literally, through watching it, because I was like, oh, maybe I'll see if there's a well-bred filly in this two-year-old sale. And I would go through the whole catalog and only be able to come up with like one or two of those kind of where they have unbelievable broodmare residual. And so the light bulb kind of went off that, yes, normally those kind of horses get bought as yearling sales at the yearling sales. So it is a performance-based sale. But the good thing is if you have a really well-bred filly, and she's just an okay performer, there's still going to be fans to buy her because of that. If you have a colt that works, you know, 10-3 and gallops out like a donkey, it's not going to be the same.
Oh, do you think Carrie tells it like it is, Michelle, or do you think she holds back?
Actually, if she's going to look at it, like, there's going to be like notes on all her horses' halters, like donkey, good.
Yes, but I'm not going to put it on Twitter.
No, don't put it on Twitter. We won't push that on Twitter. Michelle, I know I have a question. Go ahead, Michelle.
I want to know what you think the most important tool a buyer can have is. Is it simply the catalog? Is there like some kind of addendum that you think is important? What is it?
Well, I think it's being, I think what's really important for these buyers is knowing your budget and the type of horse you can buy. For example, once again, in the Demerics consignment in March, one of their horses was going to bring easily north of 500,000, yet the horse has 18 vets and 10 of the vets are people where their budget is the starting bid, you know? So I think it's very important for people to understand if your budget to buy a two-year-old is $50,000, go and ask the consigners. Don't waste all your money vetting these horses that, you know, I have 50,000 to spend. And then you find out the reserve is 299. So I think that is an important thing to understand. if your budget and relative to the pedigree, performance, vetting, et cetera. I mean, if you are willing to buy a horse at the 2-year-old sale with a minor P1 chip, you will get a 50% discount and be well rewarded. I mean, we had a filly chipped last year in April, and we took it out, and she was running. She ran second, first time out of Kentucky Downs in October. Yet mm-hmm. we lost all the people that betted her because it was a simple P1 that was easy to pluck out. But she was running before a lot of those horses that had been bought for premiums even started. So right. I do think that's a great way. You know, a P1 is a very minor thing, normally clean, easy to take out, that kind of thing.
To be fair, that's why we vet some that we might not be able to afford, because we're hoping there's going to be something like that in there that's going to scare away someone, you know, like.
That makes a ton of sense. That makes a ton of sense. And Michelle, you are an end user. Carrie's an end user. For someone like me, who's a partnership and responsible for a lot of people, that's a little harder for me, because if I would disclose that to my partner saying, hey, you know, this horse was really a $300,000 horse, but we bought him for $100,000 because he has a P1, and we're going to go take the, he's going to have surgery next week. You say surgery as a reseller, like I am, it's a little more difficult. But again, what Carrie's saying, I think, is really smart. Know who you are, what you can do, know your budget, get an agent that you can trust and a vet you trust and a vet that's willing to talk to you. Because Carrie, I'm sure you've been in situations where you're like, there's all this writing on there. What does it mean? Can you help me? Right.
Oh, 100%. And I think that there's also, as we have seen, and I have seen it a million different times, there's horses that have vetting that may have been there when they were little itty bitty babies, and they prove that they're sound and they train on it just fine. So once again, it can all be a discussion in part, you know, having a realistic veterinarian. But then again, you know, with the 2-year-old sales, not being afraid to ask the consigners. I mean, these people have to resell these horses. And there may be horses where, I mean, one time I bought a filly, a cheap filly, this is about 15 years ago, and I didn't ask the consigner because she was on the phone. And so I looked at her, she was big and pretty. She was by Corinthian. That tells you how long ago it was.
Wow.
And, but she had really nice page and she worked well. Well, of course, because I'm an idiot and I've learned the hard way now, I did not realize Susan Montaigne was breezing her. She didn't carry a whip. The reason she didn't carry a whip is because the filly was such a bad tail swisher that if she even saw the whip, she would prop and eat. And so I bought a bad horse because I didn't ask. That was actually a sequel, Becky Thomas horse. I bought a bad horse off Becky because I didn't ask her opinion. If I had gone up to the consignments and asked her, she would have told me the truth.
That's what I find interesting, because that's like, you know, how do I know when they're telling the truth? Like, who you really think she would have said to you, hey, Craig, you don't want this horse, because she's doing her job too. She's trying to sell that horse for a client.
Absolutely. I think she would have, because that's the whole point. I mean, a lot of people don't want to go up and ask the consigners, because they're afraid they're tipping their hat that they're interested. But to me, especially in a performance sale, I have no doubt that Becky would have told me. I literally remember it vividly in my mind. And after I bought her, actually, Susan and I was mentoring her at the time, and she texted me. She's like, did you just buy that Corinthian filly? And I'm like, yeah, because I was buying it for a well-bred filly syndicate. And she was like, oh, my God. She's like, you're in trouble. And she was like, didn't Becky tell you? And I was like, oh, she was on the phone. So that one example, however many years ago, is first crop Corinthian. Taught me the lesson, which is
you're
funny.
Like, get off the phone.
I was like, oh shit. I mean, literally, I was like, oh my gosh, I have all these partners in this well-bred thing. And that's exactly what she did in the race. Prop. As soon as there was any negative stuff, I mean, the riders never did break her maiden.
And I know Michelle, I know you want to jump in, but I want to say one more thing. And this is it's a learning experience. So what we're saying is talk to the consigners, get to know them, ask them, and then follow along for that horse. Like, someone's going to buy that horse, you know, and see how they do and see, you know, we have certain consigners that we bought off many times that I just can't go to anymore. And it could be they're either bad horses. Maybe it's just bad luck. Don't know, but they're in the no fly zone anymore. Like, just, it doesn't work when I buy off you, the horses get hurt, whatever it is. So definitely, I agree with Carrie. Talk to the consigners, build relationships. Michelle.
Well, that's easy for you guys to say because you're both really well-known figures. If Joe Schmo walks up and I'm like, oh, excuse me, Becky Thomas, will you tell me about this horse? Do you think that she's going to say, you don't want this horse to anybody? Or is it, you know, I mean, because you guys have established relationships. So how does that work out?
I would think that at the level, I mean, this was not this for her pedigree. This was like a $30,000 filly. So she had a lot of pedigree for her price. I think that at any level, the top consigners will be honest. Now they don't have crystal balls. Not going to say, oh yeah, I think this horse is a maiden 10 and this horse is a lifted stakes winner. And this horse might be a great, they don't say that, but they can stop you from buying like this filly. Obviously nothing was going to change her mental attitude, no matter how much talent, because she worked fast, but no matter how much talent she had, in the end, she wasn't going to be a racehorse because of her mind. And I think that that's a big thing. And then they can let you know too, well, this horse had a foot and it's flared up like 4 times. And even though he's sound right now, this is the history. And a lot of the consigners won't tell you, say, do not buy this horse. They're going to just give their opinion of, and they're going to give you the information and then you can decide. You know,
and also they'll tell you, and also, you know, there's safety in place in OBS, and Michelle and Carrie, correct me if I'm wrong, but there's, you know, you can do blood tests after you buy a horse. You can go back. I believe you can X-ray the horse after. Is that true? Yes. And then if there's something like glaring, that's new that you can go back. There's ways to return horses. So there's all kinds of, what's the word I'm looking for?
Warranty. There are lots of warranties. Yeah,
in place. Carrie, talk about that. Have you ever had a situation like that where you've bought something and you've been like, hey, this is not what we bought?
One didn't like the whip when I waved it.
No, you can't do that.
No. Well, that I can't do, but I have twice bought horses off the back ring report. This is kind of a backhanded story though.
Don't use names.
No. I meant as in, even though, okay, so twice I bought horses where they had their vet reports were clean. And I was in the back ring on both times, and they were lovely horses where I got them for like 30 cents on the dollar. And then somebody that had vetted said horse came up to me and said, hey, by the way, that report is wrong. This horse actually has this, and both of them are knee problem. No, excuse me. One was a knee, one was a stifle. So anyway, so the one horse we bought, and I had... it written, and sure enough, he did have a giant knee spur, and it wasn't on the report. And so I went to the consigner and I said, look, you know, here it is. Anyway, so they wanted to go to panel, and I said, okay. I said, I have had 3 opinions done just to make sure. So I went to panel both times, and I won. Where you go up with your veterinary opinion, the consigner goes up with their veterinary opinion, and then the sales company hires 3 veterinarians that have not vetted the horse, and you go to panel and they say, okay, this clean report, this is egregious, this does not match the actual x-rays. And in my case, both times it was unanimous. Now I will tell you, both times those horses were returned, both of those horses went on to the 2-year-old sale, and both of them did well and made money. And I remember telling my vet, I'm like, you told me to return this filly because he had a stifle. And he was like, and I said, and then one of your clients bought her as a 2-year-old. And he was like, well, it healed. Mm-hmm. You know?
It's true. It's true. Because truthfully, vetting is very, very subjective.
Mm-hmm. And bones change. Yeah. Bones are living, dying. Bones change a lot. Just like I compound fracture my leg as a 17-year-old. Getting bucked off a horse when I was a riding instructor, by the way. And my leg has healed back 100%. And people don't give that enough. Bones heal. It's active. I think the soft tissue injuries would scare me a lot more than some bony changes.
And you can...
bones are constantly remodeling. That is the nature absolutely. Of bone, right?
Yes. And I think that people think it's too black and white. When you're dealing with an adult older horse... like in the show hunter world, maybe, you know, when you're looking at 8, 10, 12-year-old horse, it's going to be more static. But when you're looking at a young growing horse, I mean, these yearlings almost double in size by the time, or not double, you know, by, well, they grow significantly between the yearling and 2-year-old sale. We've had a lot of them remodel and change for the positive and for the negative.
Yeah. I want to talk about one more thing before we go, because we kind of glossed over it, but the fact that you sit and watch all of the video breezes, and I know there's a ton of people at the sale right now watching them live. Could you just take us through what you look for in a breeze? I think that's a really important thing, because it's not just the time. You kind of touched on it earlier. Just, you're watching a breeze. What makes you kind of go, wow, that was a nice breeze? And what kind of makes you go, I didn't really like that breeze? Because a 10-1 breeze, it doesn't just mean that it's 10-1.
Right. I think the best way to describe a breeze that gets all the attention is effortless. And a negative breeze would be jackhammer. And I did see some already that breeze 10 flat, and I wrote on my sheet jackhammer. But I'm a little different. What I'm looking for at the, why I watch every single breeze for every single horse, is not because I want to buy, because I don't normally buy 2-year-olds. I'm watching it because I want to know who the great sires are going to be as emerging before they cost. Like when Gunrunner hit, we bred 3 mares that year to him at 45,000. Now he's 250. So for me, watching the authentics, I thought the authentics and the McKinsey's to me have stood out a bit here at this sale.
I was going to ask you that. Yeah, I was going to ask you for your favorite kind of new sires. Michelle put us on. I actually, didn't you ask me that like 2 weeks ago and I said McKenzie?
Yes.
Yeah.
I asked you that and you said McKenzie. Yes.
That's what I mean. Yeah. So, Carrie, you see McKenzie, you see Authentic, anybody else that's kind of on your radar right now?
For me, Game Winner and Tis the Law. Tis the Law seemed to be a little bit like Tis Now, where they either breezed lights out or they kind of didn't. You know, and I know Tis the Law and Constitution can kind of sometimes do that. But I thought all 4 of those stallions have a big shot. And there were some really, really nice Vekomas that worked actually yesterday. He had a really good group that, but, you know, ultimately there's no crystal balls. I'm trying to make my best guess. And then I'm trying to sit here and refer all the people as fellow breeders. Coming out of the sale in my brain, it's authentic. But of course there can be plenty of other very successful stars. I mean, Game Winner and Tis the Law were both incredible 2-year-olds. So it wouldn't shock me to see either of them. And McKinsey, my gosh, greatest stakes for it. 2, 3, 4, 5. Yeah. He's exactly the kind of horse we should be breeding to. Soundness, mm-hmm. You know,
longevity.
Game.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes. Yeah.
Harry Brogdon, you are an absolute gem.
I'm going to miss our curry dinner this year, though.
Oh, you're not coming? Oh, no. For Ocala.
I got no one to watch my kids. Mom only has off Wednesday, Thursday, and Ryan's coming back Thursday. So, like, it's just hard. I'm not going to fly out, like, Wednesday morning and come back Thursday.
Right. Aww. Gotcha. I'm sorry to hear that. We'll miss right. you.
We appreciate you, and I will definitely see you when I get down there. And I'm also in Kentucky, so I know the weather behind you. It has been pouring rain all hours. What is going on around here?
Can I ask you one last question?
Yeah,
what's your opinion of who are going to be the freshman sire? Who are the top? Now I'm asking you because now I'm picking your guys' brains.
I had said McKenzie several weeks ago because we have a really nice McKenzie filly that we bought as a yearling that we just love. And Eddie Woods speaks so highly of her. I've seen her a couple times and she's grown into this like beast of a filly. That was my choice when Michelle asked me. Michelle, I don't remember. Did you take someone else?
No, McKenzie was mine also.
Yours was McKenzie also. Yep,
We bought a McKenzie yearling that we just loved. And I thought he was going to be an absolute star this year. And I thought looking at some of the other horses, he'd be a little bit more affordable. Cause I feel like a lot of times when you have like those big names, like the Authentics, they tend to be outside of our price range. I thought McKenzie kind of hit everything square in the nose.
Correct me if I'm wrong, Carrie, but when you have someone popular, like a Justify or an American Pharoah, and they go into stuff for their first year of their 2-year-old sales, like, people just want one of those, right? It's almost like a collector's item.
Got to consider, I think the Authentics average like 320 as yearlings. So the ones I'm seeing at the 2-year-old sales are the lower level ones because Pinhookers can't buy $300,000 yearlings. That's so I guess in my mind, I'm giving Authentic a bit more, you know. I love the McKinseys because I really felt like so many of them look just like him.
Just like him, right?
Yeah, he's which is totally, exactly like Street Sense.
Totally stamped boom, buddy, him. Boom, buddy, boom.
Yeah.
Yep. So, yeah. Anyway. We will see you down. Thank serious. You. Thank you for everything, Carrie. We appreciate your time, and we will do this again.
Thank you. Appreciate it.
Carrie Brogdon here on the Owner's
Thanks,
Box. She was so good as always. She's always so knowledgeable. Well, she's
she's honest.
Well, she's honest.
She is honest and no holds barred.
And she'll push and pull. She'll push people away because they won't mm-hmm. like that. A lot of people don't like people who tell it like this. But I will say about Carrie, the one thing you cannot argue with is her knowledge base.
Yeah.
I mean, she is incredibly knowledgeable. Whether you agree with her or not is completely different mm-hmm. than the fact that she studies, spends time. Her Machmer Hall is one of the top breeders in the world, probably, right? You know, the work she puts in, the fact that she can talk about this. And when she talks about it, it's, I'm going to call it down to earth. It's she's talking about it so that people who are watching the show or listening to the show can understand what she's trying to say, which I like. A lot of times people try to be, we laughed about sophistication. You know,
distinguished.
They try to use words, maybe they try to impress. That's a better way to put it. I don't think Carrie's trying to impress anybody when she talks about this stuff. I think she's just being her and she knows her shit and she's able to express it in a way that's not condescending. But helpful.
Right.
Wow. Agreed. You should, that was like a great, we should write that down somewhere.
Oh, you want me to write that down? Okay.
Yeah, write that down. 40. No. All right. What do we got? Hey, Santa Anita's off this weekend. We don't even have to talk about it.
Yeah. That's right. We are off this weekend. We had a planned break. And I don't know, I halfway feel like we should have maybe run, but also I feel like us not running this week really contributed to the amazing field sizes that we had going into this week. And also does look like a forecast of rain. So it might've been just a blessing all around that it happened to be scheduled. We did have a really, really fantastic Santa Anita Derby weekend, 4 racing days. We had big 8, 9, 10 horse fields. We had oversubscribed fields. And we had 32,000 people on track for Santa Anita Derby day. So it was awesome. Both of my kids ran in like the kids 5K. So Olivia That's did awesome. The 6-furlong race and she ran 9th overall, 3rd of the girls. And Spencer did the 1-furlong dash for 7 and under and he ran 2nd.
Great.
So I was really Look proud of them.
What a proud mom.
And I have to show this because Olivia told me I had to show.
Okay. I can't wait. This is a surprise. I have no idea what's coming up.
Olivia has a mare.
Okay.
And the mare has her first baby.
Oh, wow. And Olivia owns the horse.
Olivia owns the horse.
Okay. What's the horse's
Isn't
name?
So cute.
I can't see it.
Oh, I didn't share it. My bad. Here he is.
Oh, my God. That's awesome.
Isn't he so cute?
Did she name him already?
She wants to, but we do have a partner on it. So I told her she couldn't quite name him yet.
Okay.
But Spencer calls him Major face. Tom. I know. Isn't he so cute?
And who is the dam and who is the stallion, the sire?
The dam is a smiling tiger filly that Ryan like plucked out of a field because Olivia wanted to name a horse and she was working really well, but her feet were terrible. And our shoer like went in, she had white Lyme's disease. So like when he bored into her foot, her entire foot was hollow on both feet. So we're like, let's just give her some time and see. But like, it was just growing out so slowly. It just was not gonna, we'd be 5 or 6 years old before that. And that was something that, you know, she had gotten an illness. It wasn't like an unsoundness issue. It was a infection, right, that caused that.
Yep.
So,
that's so cute. And who's the sire?
So this is a Tom's Tribute baby. Our partners are shareholders on Tom's Tribute. And then she's bringing bread back to Mo Forza.
Fantastic. That's a great picture. Congratulations to Spencer, who is now in the screen again, and also Olivia.
You know, to be fair, he's only 5 and he comes over because he's been getting himself dressed and he needed something to eat.
Amazing.
And he, you know, he just needed some help like buckling his buckle.
I don't care if Spencer's on the whole show. You're talking to the wrong guy if you think that's the case. Special thanks to Carrie Brogdon. Michelle, next week, I'll be back in Kentucky. So okay. we'll do it after the sale. We'll do a little sales recap from OBS. And hopefully you will have a great weekend.
Looking forward to that for sure. And let me just make sure we don't have any housekeeping to take care of. Okay.
Housekeeping. Yep.
All right. No, just that. Just we all want to know that OBS is in town. So it's the largest two-year-old sale in the world. We've had 10 graded stakes winners so far from last year's April sale at OBS, including Dreamfire, Carson's Run, Nysos, Intricate, Nothing Like You, Winstock, Hades, Manama Gold, Lemon Muffin, and Power Squeeze. So
that's amazing.
Dates are April 16th to April 19th. And yeah. If you're not going to be there, you're missing out.
Yeah, I'm going to be there 14, 15, 16. I'm going to fly out on Wednesday. I'm going to leave it up to my good friend John Dowd to find us a horse.
John is so great. I love John.
The best.
Genius.
All right. He's genius. Let's go. Put it up.
All right. Bye.
See everybody.